morning, friends, and welcome to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. Today is November 2nd, 1984. I'm Gail Malloy, and each Friday morning at 9 o'clock, we'll meet a pioneer. This morning, we'll spend the next hour with Lola Tilley, who came to Fairbanks in the 1920s. Lola Tilley is best known for her work with the university, known as the College of Agriculture and Mines back in the 20s, as the first head of the Department of Home Economics. To start off our program, to get us in the mood, I'm going to take us way back with Artie Shaw and his Gramercy 5, Summit River Drive. Yes, that's Artie Shaw and his Gramercy 5 Summit River Drive. It is time now for Meet a Pioneer, brought to you by Larson's Fine Jewelers, Sophie Station, the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, Interior Signs, the Riverboat Discovery, and the Two Rivers Lodge. You're listening to Paul Rosenthal's Bravura Variations on Alaska's Flag Song. Thank you. This morning we're meeting pioneer Lola Tilley, who came to Fairbanks in the 1920s. Lola Tilley was born on January 16, 1898. She is 86 years old. She was born in Wayside, Illinois. And good morning, Lola.
Good morning.
You know, I would like to acknowledge to your friends, my friends, and our listeners this morning that there was a little twist of circumstances last night. I had announced all week that you were to be the guest today, and we actually taped our interview earlier this week at your home. And the tape failed. After I had done several tests, we discovered last night that due to the equipment, there was a loud hum on it. It was not airable. And I called you last night and asked if you would... what could we do, Lola? And I'll never forget your words. The show must go on.
You mean I broke it?
No, you didn't do anything wrong. We don't know what happened, but I am sure glad that you were able to come into the studio this morning live and in person so we can talk again. I didn't want to miss this morning. Well, I'm going to let you tell the story. How did it happen? What was the month and the year that you came to Fairbanks? What were the circumstances?
Thank you, Gail. It's good to be here. Well, way back in the early 1929, I was teaching at the University of Minnesota when my department head came down to my office and said, "How would you like to go to Alaska?" I said, "Well, I had always wanted to go there, but I didn't think much about it." She said, "Well, the president of the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines, Dr. Charles Bunnell, would be there soon and wanted to interview prospective teachers." I said, "Well, I wasn't very enthusiastic about it, but anyway, I went in for the interview, and he offered me the job as a head professor and head of home economics at the college. I said, "Well, Dr. Bunnell, I would like to go, but I couldn't stay but one year. For some reason, I thought that was a good excuse." He said, "Oh, well, that's all right. If you didn't want to stay the second year, we wouldn't want you." So he left with no commitment on my part, and he stopped at Juneau to attend the state legislature. And, of course, there he met considerable opposition. There was one legislator who said, "I'll not vote for anything for Dr. Bunnell's $50,000 woodshed." Of course, what he meant was it was a land-grant college, and the federal government had appropriated $50,000 to set it up. Well, 2 weeks later, he wired from Fairbanks the contract and asked me to bring somebody with me. He needed another teacher. And by the way, the salary was about $3,000 at that time.
$3,000 a year?
a year. And yes, believe it or not. So I hired my office mate, Aline Sewell, and those were the days before there was job advertising. There was no selection committee, no affirmative action, and there was no tenure. And, of course, women were not paid as much as men. It was a big decision, of course, but I decided to come to Alaska, and that's exactly what I did. It took 2 weeks to get here. I had to borrow the money to come up here, and I went up from my home in southern Illinois to pick up Miss Sewell in Minneapolis.
Now, you were a miss, too. You were both single.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. I hadn't even seen Gray Tilley at that time. And we took the weekly Alaska steamship from Seattle on a Saturday. It took a whole week to get to Seward, and then we took the train in to Fairbanks, and that was a 2-day trip with an overnight stop at Curry. We stopped at the College Station, a little building at the foot of the College Hill. And there, the dormitory hostess, Fema Sammons, boarded the train to accompany us to Fairbanks and to take us to the Model Cafe for dinner as Dr. Bunnell's guests. Of course, he didn't arrive until afterwards. He came to the hotel to get acquainted.
Now, what hotel were you staying at?
Oh, that was the Nordale Hotel on 2nd Street. It's about where the co-op drug is in that area. As a matter of fact, it's where that parking lot is now.
Now, that burned in 72. So what did that hotel look like when you arrived in 29?
It was just an ordinary hotel at that time. It had a fairly sizable lobby, and we had rooms, single rooms, $45 a month, with hall bath, and we ate at the Model Cafe, which was across the street. Now, that was an experience, too, since prices were very high. We had to go in groups of two in order to get a well-balanced, nutritious meal for a reasonable price.
Now, why did groups of two?
Well, the menu would be like pork chops, a certain price, or a steak or a meatloaf, and that included only potatoes and a dessert. No, I don't think there was a dessert, but it meant meat and potatoes is really what it meant. So one would order a big salad and another one order a meat and then another one a vegetable. And so we had well-balanced
meal. So you kind of split it then.
Oh, yes.
Sounds like the portions were for working men.
Oh, yes. The portions were huge.
Do you remember
when? And, of course, Bernie Carr and Pete Despo were co-owners there, and Lil Angerman, that many people know, was a waitress, and she was very helpful, and they were all very cordial.
Do you remember what the prices, what a meal cost?
And we could get it down probably to an average, maybe at that time. It seemed like a terrific price, less than $5. And we ate three meals a day there. And after, the next morning, Dr. Bunnell sent his student chauffeur in with the car to take us out to the university for orientation. After that, we went on the Brill car, a little Toonerville trolley, we called it, on the railroad. And the very amiable conductor, Art Marsh, would always look out to see if we might be coming late over the Cushman Street bridge, and then he would back up and wait until we got there, and that was characteristic of the casual way of life here.
What month did you arrive?
I arrived August 24th, 1929, 55 years ago. So you see, I have lived through 55 years with 25 years of statehood. Well, the transportation by bus, Paul and Flora Griman had the first bus on the dirt road to college, and that was a one-way traffic through the peat bog. But sometimes we did walk the track to save money, 3 miles on the railroad track. And, of course, it was very handy to have a .22 rifle along to bring back grouse or rabbit for dinner.
Lola, I wonder, you say you walked and had not been up here before. Did you find that you had brought the right clothes? And what did you wear then? What was a young woman wearing in 1929?
We invested in the up-to-the-minute fashion, which was high boots and those pants that tucked into the boots, that looked like military pants, and leather jackets were very popular at that time. Of course, they weren't very warm, but we learned to layer our garments. We didn't have pantsuits like you have now, but we did learn to put on extra layers. Food prices were high. You mentioned that before. Of course, we were not shopping for cooking, but there was nothing by air at that time, so everything came in by freight and frozen. The chickens were frozen and shipped dressed, but not drawn, with head and feet on. We learned to use evaporated milk and dry eggs, and all the meat was cut by electric stall. The carcasses were hanging right in front of the customers and cut according to the customer's desire. There were no pennies at that time, and because pennies, nothing came at such a small price. The pennies came in after the Piggly Wiggly came in. Always remember needing a pair of shoestrings, going into Bradley's shoe repair shop there on 2nd Street, and asked for shoelaces, and he threw down two pair, and I said, I just want one pair, and he said, oh, well, you might as well take two pair, because it'll be two bits anyway. Everything was labeled by bits, and of course, two bits meant 25 cents, as I said, no nickels or dimes. And there was many people remember the grocery store that was on the corner of 2nd and Cushman, where that gift shop is now, and that was Lavery and Bailey. And Hal Bailey was quite a jokester, and he had an arrangement. He wanted to impress the tourists, who thought everything was so high, so he had an arrangement with a local customer who came in and asked for a dollar's worth of grapes. Hal very carefully cut off one grape, put it in a paper sack, and took the dollar, and while the tourists looked on. And of course, the dollar was a paper dollar, was a silver dollar, because we had no paper dollars.
Playing tricks on the tourists.
Had no paper dollars at that time.
We're going to take a break right here to acknowledge a couple of our sponsors, and we'll be back in a moment with Meet a Pioneer, and we're meeting Pioneer Lola Tilley. Back in a moment. Alaska is still a land of pioneers, like the Binkley family, who for three generations have operated riverboats in the state of Alaska.
Running the riverboat Discovery has given our family the opportunity to show so many others just a little corner of the Alaska we love. That's also one of the reasons we're proud to be a sponsor of Meet a Pioneer. This program gives us all a chance to find out more about the fascinating history of this special place we call Alaska, and we look forward to each week's program. We're looking forward to seeing you again next summer aboard the riverboat Discovery.
Alaskans have always been famous for their hospitality. The same wonderful hospitality you still find at the Two Rivers Lodge, where Don and Stasha Troutman offer the best menu and interior, a comfortable, quiet atmosphere, and that famous Alaskan welcome to the people who are today's history makers. If you've been meaning to try one of the most talked about dining experiences in the Alaskan interior, don't wait any longer. Go out tonight to the Two Rivers Lodge, 16 Mile Chino Hot Springs Road.
Yeah.
we're back, meeting pioneer Lola Tilley. Lola, when you got here, okay, you're a young single woman, and there was another lady with you. What was the percentage of men and women, and what was the situation with that?
More men than women, which was, in a way, nice for the women. One of the so-called eligible bachelors was Martin Penske of Penske's clothing store, and he always bought cakes at the church bazaars for the teachers at the hotel. And some of those teachers were Annabeth Rennie Hanlon, Sylvia Elarth Pratt, Laura Lee Carr, and Mary Benjamin Adler. There were two that came up at the same time, Anne Robinson Ween, who still lives here, and Beth Green Walkwitz, and they didn't live at the hotel but rented Mrs. Hess's log cabin down on Cushman Street. It had no plumbing and was very comfortable.
Now, who's Mrs. Hess?
Now, Mrs. Hess was later a member of the Board of Regents, and you may recall from history, she was the one that actually selected the site on the hill for the building, and she tied her handkerchief to a bush, and that was the site of the first building, the old main building. Huh. Mrs. Hess, you know, lived up on Cushman, and she used to tell about the tourists who came by her place there and said that they would peer into her cottage and say, why, they even have carpets on the floor. Now, those were the same tourists that wrapped their legs with newspaper or toilet paper to ward off the mosquitoes. We didn't have spraying for mosquitoes at that time.
Yeah. Toilet paper on their legs?
Underneath the silk stockings.
Oh, my.
Uh-huh. We didn't have pantyhose at that time. But anyway, it seemed to work. We had no TV, no radio, no paved streets, no Eskimos, only one or two blacks, and we had no dial phones. You just asked the operator for the name of the person. You might say, I'd like to speak to Mrs. Hess, and the operator would say, oh dear, today is Mrs. Hess's bridge day. Shall I call her at Minnie Clark's? And then you were sure to get her. And what service that was, and bless their hearts, those operators, centrals we call them, Mrs. Herring, her daughters still live here, Mrs. Brandt, Mrs. Weir, and Edna Lawson, who lives here. And they were just wonderful. One time I had several calls to make, and the operator said, oh, just hang on there, and I'll connect you with the next one. So without having to look up the number or repeat, I just reeled off one name after the other. We had lots of activities. The skating was under the bridge, the Cushman Street Bridge, and that's where the dog teams started and returned at that time, and the ice palace for the winter carnival. We always had those lovely carvings of ice. Skiing was not as popular at that time, but the ski trail was up where the Birch Hill Cemetery is, and we had a warm-up cottage there. at that time. Now, work at the college was very exacting, and Dr. Bunnell, of course, was very supportive of home economics, and he would do anything to help us out, and also for the students. No student could drop out because of finances. He could always find a job or a loan, and usually from his own finances. He had a garden at the foot of the hill by Old Main Building at that time, and I had said to him, I wish I had some vegetables for my class, and he didn't say anything, but when I came back from lunch that day, the vegetables were in my lab, and can you feature that? The college president digging and delivering the vegetables himself.
How many students did you have?
Less than 100. Everybody was on first name basis, and it was a very...
What sort of courses did you teach?
Oh, all the courses leading to the bachelor's degree. We didn't have graduate work at that time, but it was a fully accredited college. It later became the university in 1935, and our students could transfer credits to any college outside with full accreditation. I mentioned the fact that Dr. Bunnell was very supportive. He obtained several cases of canned salmon for us to work with and experiment with, and we did a lot of research developing original recipes, which were published in a very attractive bulletin called Canned Salmon Delicacies, and he wrote the foreword to that. And, you know, bird's eye frozen vegetables, frozen foods were not on the market at that time. But we did a lot of experimenting with freezing. And we also developed recipes for the use of local lowbush cranberries, and those were published in a New York newspaper. So we had some wide publicity for the college in that way. Local potatoes were not fully accepted because everyone thought they were too sweet, but we did some chemical tests for sugar and starch, and found that with proper storage, local potatoes became more acceptable.
Huh.
And another challenge was the opportunity to work with Otto Geist, the archaeologist, who brought back the Eskimo artifacts from the diggings on St. Lawrence Island. I worked with him in the little museum, which was a little 2x4 classroom in the old main building. And I wrote four articles with descriptions and pictures on Eskimo food habits, clothing, shelter, and children's toys. And Dr. Bunnell hand-carried those articles, those manuscripts, back to Washington, D.C. to be published in a series in the National Journal of Home Economics.
Huh. But when were those published?
Well, that would be in the 30s. They are on file. The originals are on file in the museum now.
Oh, my.
I'm pretty sure. And then, of course, they are in the periodicals of the Journal of Home Economics in the indexes for that time. The university offered a number of short courses for the townspeople, and another reason was to increase the enrollment to get more funds, of course. The miners' short course brought in the prospectors and miners during the freeze-up, and they lived in the dormitories and registered in various courses. One man chose not to live in the dormitory, but in a shack up above the on top of the hill behind the university, easy walking distance, and he ate his own meals up there. But the popular cook, Ann Luke, many people remember her, would save the leftovers from the dining room. And the dining room, of course, was in the lower floor or basement of the girls' dormitory at that time. She just set those cans of leftover food outdoors to freeze, and he would pick them up and turn those blocks of frozen food upside down on the block, on the boxes and stumps beside his door. And when he decided on his menu, he just hacked off a portion of each frozen pile. You could observe, and I went up there one day to see what was going on, and you could see a cross-section of baked beans, spaghetti and meatballs, sauerkraut wieners, stew, mashed potatoes and gravy, and there would be a stack of sourdough hotcakes and stack of biscuits. Very handy. No shopping at the supermarket. Now, one popular course was my camp cookery course, and that was held, of course, in the lab in the old main building on the third floor. And very early, an old prospector asked me very seriously how to make biscuits if I were out in the boondocks with no utensils. And I thought, this is great to have someone who's so interested. And I explained very carefully how to roll down the sacks, the sides of the flour sacks, and make a well and add the baking powder, the salt, fat, and dry milk, add water and mix with a clean stick, and bake the soft dough on a stick and or with an improvised reflector. He sat on the edge of his chair, listening and nodding, and when I finished, he just sat by with a sigh of relief. "That's right," he said. "I just wanted to see if you really knew how." Well, little did he know that that was old hat for me, because I had been teaching camp cookery to the forestry students at the University of Minnesota. But he had to test the young professor. I was accepted then, and after that, I could do no wrong.
Thank you. That's a great story. We'll be back in just a moment after we acknowledge our sponsors, Denali Chiropractic Clinic, Interior Signs, and the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop. Sam and Jane McConkie believe beautiful things are timeless, and everything you find at the Forget-Me-Not shop is beautiful. Fine linen, silver, crystal, decorator items for your home or office, and that little something for special friends. Forget-Me-Not adds a feeling of luxury to even the most practical items. So, for beautiful things for years to come, for your friends, your home, or for yourself, remember the Forget-Me-Not Gift Shop, open 10 to 6, 6 days a week in Northgate Square.
Meet a Pioneer is sponsored in part by Interior Signs, long established as one of the interior's most professional, most dependable year-round sign makers. They're licensed, insured, and always ready to serve Fairbanks with signs of every kind. Signs for business, contracting, or creative design. So for signs that stand the test of time, call Interior Signs at 479-3859. That's 479-3859. Interior Signs at 2405 South Cushman.
Improper foundation alignment can cause serious problems with an entire structure. Problems that may disturb or even totally disrupt normal functioning of that structure. Thus, chiropractic endorses the importance of spinal integrity combined with a personal commitment to physical fitness to help each individual achieve their maximum potential for good health and proper bodily functioning. For information on how chiropractic can help you, see Dr. Carol Davis of the Denali Chiropractic Clinic, 3525 College Road. Phone 479-0485.
You're listening to KFAR Radio's Meet a Pioneer. I'm Gail Malloy, and we're meeting pioneer Lola Tilley. Lola, what were the students like? What were the students like back in the 20s and 30s?
I would say very much like students of these days, serious students. And we had students from inside Alaska and outside. Mm-hmm. We didn't take long vacations because it was too expensive to go.
Did you have a lot of women students at the college, too?
Yes, it was a mixture uh-huh. of men and women. And then I was telling about this Camp Cookery course. I also had a credit course in Camp Cookery, and there were students like Tim Twitchell who got a job as a cook with the Road Commission, and that paid for his entire 4 years of college. And then there was Allie Murphy, who held responsible jobs on the Dew Line.
What was the Dew Line?
Early morning.
Defense?
Uh-huh.
Early, okay.
See, and he is also one of the graduates. And also there was Jack Mabee, the famous sourdough Jack of San Francisco now.
He was one of your students?
That's right. And he sent me an autographed copy of his book called Sourdough Recipes. And he has been very popular. Of course, he doesn't tell anybody that he learned how to make sourdough in Lola Tilley's camp cookery class. And then there was Leo Mark Anthony, who used his knowledge there in teaching university mining short courses after he graduated. Well, it's always good to hear from former students. And recently, I just had a letter from a former student of more than 50 years. If I have time, I'd like to quote from his
letter.
Yes,
you do. Go ahead.
I haven't seen him or heard from him for over 50 years. And I quote a recent letter, and he said that back in 1932, there were three young men students at the college batching it in a cabin at the foot of the hill, belonging to Professor Gasser. Someone suggested we enroll in your camp cookery course, and I'll never forget how you taught us the making of baking powder biscuits, the cooking of green vegetables, cabbage, and so forth, making of pies with dried apples, gravy, and so forth. In planning for Thanksgiving, Ken McClarty had sent outside for a 10-pound turkey, frozen turkey, which we took to your lab, and you showed us how to make the dressing, stuff, and truss the bird. So we took it down to the cabin and put it in the oven to roast. It was a Thanksgiving I'll never forget. Ken and his brother Herb had invited two old sourdoughs living nearby, and that's characteristic of those days, sharing with others. They were there for dinner, and the night before, Ken had made three dried apple pies. We made 2 quarts of ice cream. And the freezer, of course, was courtesy of your lab. And we flavored it with wild cranberry juice. We mashed local potatoes, and we had local green cabbage cooked quickly according to your direction to preserve the green color. We had cranberry jam with those good baking powder biscuits that I made, and it was one heck of a memorable Thanksgiving dinner that lasted all afternoon. And that's quoted from a letter from a recent letter from Jerry Knox that I haven't seen for over 50 years. But that's one of the fringe benefits of teaching the appreciation of former students.
That's very special.
And it was a very informal campus. Dr. Bunnell was a man of visions. His standards were very high, and he was very perceptive. He suspected a young 6-year-old Ernest Patty, Jr., of turning out the lights. Someone was turning out the lights. That, you know, we walked up the hill from the college railroad station to the old main building. And so he said to young Ernest, "What time did you turn off those lights last night, Ernest?" And Ernest, without thinking, immediately said, "Oh, about 6 o'clock." And without realizing the trap that he had been set. Now, you know, in the early 30s, he kept the college open in spite of budget cuts. We all took voluntary cuts in salary. Miss Sewell took the semester off to finish her master's degree. I doubled up to teach her courses, and I taught a summer course at the University of Minnesota to supplement my income. So we got by. I told you about the first trip outside, and that was by train to Nenana.
Now, what did you go outside for?
Well, just I wasn't sure whether I wanted to continue teaching at the university. But since I had decided, yes, I wanted to continue the work that I had started, then we took the trip outside for the summer.
Now, was this after the first year? The 1 year? After one year?
Yes, after the first year. See, this would be in 1930.
Okay.
And so we took the train to Nenana and the Stern Wheeler riverboat up to Tanana, and from Tanana up to the Yukon River to Dawson City. At Dawson City, we exchanged to another Stern Wheeler and went down to Whitehorse. Whitehorse, we took that narrow gauge railroad. You know, that was through the White Pass, and to Skagway. At Skagway, we took the Canadian boat to Vancouver and Victoria, and then back to Minnesota and Illinois. But on the return trip, I took the steamship to Valdez, got off at Valdez, and then took the what they call the stage over the Richardson Highway. It was called a stage. It was actually a 7-passenger Cadillac, but I was the only passenger at that time, and I had lots of tension, and we had an overnight stop at Copper Center. And my father had been so impressed with my hunting experience that he had bought a .22 rifle for me from Sears. It was still in the package, but the driver assembled it, and he watched for grouse and stopped, and I got out and aimed and got back to Fairbanks with enough grouse to share with friends.
We're going to take one more break here, and then we'll enter our last 10 minutes to kind of sum things up. We're talking with Lola Tilley on KFAR's Meet a Pioneer. Back in a moment.
Today's Alaskans are demanding more. more style, more options, more flexibility, and more for their money. And they're finally...
Over the years, some of those dreams changed and others came true. Today, Larson's is still a family-owned business and one of the finest and most complete jewelry stores in the interior. Almost 40 years of skill and experience go into everything they do. Like Fairbanks, they've grown, but they're still your friend and neighbor. Larson's, fine jeweler since 1946 at 405 Noble.
Is waiting for you.
We're back with Lola Tilley on KFAR's Meet a Pioneer. I'm Gail Malloy. Lola, in 1929, you arrived here, and it was shortly after that that the famous Black Tuesday happened and the stock market crash, and then the country went into the Depression. This was the territories at the time, but how did Alaska fare during that time and Fairbanks?
We, of course, had been used to rations, you might say, because if the ship didn't come in, we just didn't have fresh stuff, and we shared what we had. But we didn't have those ration tickets. We bought what we could on hand. People were very careful not to, careful to share. So we didn't really see as too much of the Depression, you might say.
People were kind of watching their, counting their two bits and everything anyway. Now you were, we've heard about what the business life and the working life was like. Now you were a single woman when you got here. Aside from work, what did you do for fun? What did you all, did you have parties or dances? And how did someone date back in that?
Of course, there was lots of activity, lots of things going on. Of course, there were four churches, the Presbyterian, Catholic, Christian Science, and Episcopal, and they all had activities. And every Saturday night there was something, usually a dance, and everybody went to dances, whether you had a date or not. At the Moose Hall and the Eagles Hall, and like the Fireman's Ball, the Elk's Purple Bubble, and the Library Dance. And the dances were coordinated with the university, and the university, of course, had dances and plays and so forth, so that the town and the college were coordinated for activities.
You told me a wonderful story when we talked earlier this week about how the resourceful young men in Fairbanks, they were not the fresh flowers.
Yes, we didn't have any florists in town, and so instead of corsages, the men took baskets of fruit.
That's lovely.
Or sent baskets of fruit to the to their women friends. And at the hotel, we would always could always scare up enough eligible bachelors, men and women, for a party. Mm-hmm. And there were lots of bridge occasions, bridge luncheons and bridge dinners and. And another thing, too, the women always wore long evening gowns. It was a dress-up affair, mm-hmm. although we had longies underneath, which we immediately took off before the dance started.
Now, there were movies then, too.
Yes, we had. The Empress Theater was on 2nd around the area of the co-op, and it was... black and white, and silent movies. The first one I remember, the sound movie, was Al Jolson. And we had a wonderful organ. Don Adler was the organist. Mm. And that was lovely music for the entertainment. As I said before, we didn't have radio or... TV, but I guess, and we were excited, of course, when
radio came in, and that was, of course, KFAR.
Now, you announced on KFAR for a while.
Yes, I had a weekly program on KFAR.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
It had to have been during this time, then, that you met your husband-to-be. Well, tell us about Gray Tilly.
In 1937, on commencement night, I was married to Gray Tilly at the Presbyterian Church at 7th and Cushman. He served in the Navy in World War I. He made 11 trips on a convoy across the Atlantic and several trips down into South America. Later, he was an engineering student at the Washington State University. Now, in 1923, that was before I came to Alaska, he took a so-called weekend cruise to southeastern Alaska, and he expected to go back to Seattle. But it was a long weekend. He worked for a while as a purser on the old Estabeth mail boat out of Ketchikan. And then he worked in the Juneau Treadwell gold mines, and he mined in the Chestachina area until, as we say, the gold pay dirt ran out, and the only food supply was down to beans and blueberries without sugar on sourdough hotcakes. Eventually, he arrived in Fairbanks, traveling for days by a dog team. Now, we built our own home up on Kellum Street, and most of our friends were amazed that we would do that, because they expected to make their stake and retire outside. But Gray always said, "Is there any other place?" So we built our own home, expecting to stay here. And I lived in that place until he died in 73. In 74, I moved into a condominium. And everybody said, condominium in Hawaii? No. Fairbanks. Fairbanks, Alaska. Why? And that's because I want to live here, and I don't expect to live any other place. 55 years through 25 years of statehood, and it's exciting to have been served under the first four presidents, Dr. Bunnell, Dr. Moore, Dr. Patty, and Dr. Wood. As I said, exciting to be part of history in the making. Really, I didn't ever expect to be.
Absolutely fascinating. You're past president of the PEO Sisterhood Fairbanks chapter, president of the Farthest North Girl Scout Council, the VFW Ladies Auxiliary, of which your husband was a member of the VFW, president of the American Association of University Women Fairbanks Branch, the United Presbyterian Women's Association, former chairman of the National Board of Directors of the American Association of Retired Teachers, chairman of the Executive Committee of the American Association of Retired Persons and National Retired People. You are among the world's who's who of women, published book 1980. Absolutely fascinating. Still busy and active. You're 86 years old, and your youth and energy belies your years. Any secrets, Lola?
Well, I have a great deal of faith and belief in God and my church, and I have the love and concern of my friends, and that means a great deal, the support that I have there. And, of course, I swim every morning, and that helps, too.
Did you swim this morning?
Oh, yes. I'm up to swim at 6 o'clock at Hammy Pool and enjoy it, and a positive outlook on life is my theory. And you young people inspire me and keep me going. And thank you. You're a beautiful person. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure, Lola Tilley. And you have many, many friends and students who remember you from many, many years, and you're much loved. And thank you for being on Meet a Pioneer.
About the Swede who sitting with his bride after the ceremony, and everybody was talking, and he hadn't said a thing. And she said to him, "Well, Ole, why don't you say something?" And he said, "I tank too much been said already."
Been listening to Meet a Pioneer. A taped version of this interview will become a part of the permanent oral history collection of the Alaska and Polar Regions Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This program was produced by Gail Malloy.
We join ABC Information News in progress.
Through the whole country today, with the emphasis on the Midwest and the East. President Reagan started in Detroit this morning, and that's where Walter Mondale will wind up tonight. Mr. Reagan has been warning his followers against complacency in the face of the polls, while Walter Mondale has been telling his people they can beat the odds on Tuesday. The ailing 71-year-old father of soul singer Marvin Gaye was sentenced today to 5 years probation in the shooting death of his son. Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Gordon Ringer said any additional jail time for Marvin Gaye Sr. would, quote, impose a death sentence. Velma Barfield died today in North Carolina. The last woman to be executed in this country before Barfield was Maude Duncan, who killed her daughter-in-law and went to the gas chamber for it 22 years ago. In Poland, once again, there is conflict between Lech Wałęsa and prominent dissidents over tactics. ABC's David Ensor reports.
Solidarity leader Lech Wałęsa says he does not support the call by a group of Gdańsk Union activists for a one-hour strike to protest the killing of Father Jerzy Popiełuszko. Wałęsa said he thinks the climate is unfavorable for such actions. Wałęsa says he plans to speak at the funeral Saturday for the pro-Solidarity priest who was kidnapped and then killed, the authorities say, by three Interior Ministry policemen. The group calling for the strike say in their statement that, quote, "We have to put a stop to passivity as a method of struggle against evil." Wałęsa, who has said he believes the government when it says it did not order the killing, has been calling for restraint. David Ensor, ABC News, Warsaw.
There is a report that two more Polish government officials are being held in connection with the death of Father Popiełuszko, higher-level officials than the ones already under arrest. Unemployment rate for last month was 7.4%. That's according to new government figures. That rate was the same as it was in September, just about what it was when Ronald Reagan took office. On Wall Street, the Dow is up a little over 3 points. This is ABC News.
Yee-haw! New Hamburger Helper Chili Tomato Western Style with a new livelier flavor.
Hamburger Helper.
More seasoning.
Helped your hamburger.
More spices.
Helper, make a great deal.
Now the flavor of Hamburger Helper Chili Tomatoes livelier with chili, onion, pepper, and spices. Turn your plain hamburger into an even livelier meal.
Uh-huh. Hamburger Helper. Helped your hamburger. Helper.
Livelier Chili Tomato.
Make a great deal.
For the ABC Information Network, I'm Kate Dorton.
This is Keith Morris of Sports Illustrated. My guest, one of the fine veterans of the Pittsburgh Steelers, wide receiver John Stallworth. And John, in your 11th year, you look just like a rookie to me so far in the early going.
I feel good. Last year I had some injuries and curtailed my performance somewhat, and really looking forward to this year, really prepared for this year, and just having a great time.
Love to see you making those great receptions, and you remind me of R.C. Owens years ago. Anybody tell you that?
No, that's the first time I heard that. I've heard of him. He was a great player, and I think being compared to him is a great compliment.
And in the offseason, the Stallworths are in Alabama. What have you been doing?
Well, I have a real estate development firm down there, and we're doing well with that, and just pursuing that, going to school, working on the master's in business administration.
A lot of new faces on the Steelers now. How do you think you'll do this year?
I think we'll do well. We have some good young talent. We replaced some veterans, and I think we'll do well. We have a new quarterback in David Woodley. The guy that's not going to make too many mistakes out there. Calls a great game, and I think we're going to do really well.
Well, Sports Illustrated will be following you, and keep 82 going.
Okay, thank you very much.
This is Keith Morris of Sports Illustrated.
A car in good working order is not only safe and dependable, but can save you money in fuel and repairs. Hutchison Standard Service is the place to take your car when you want a dependable engine tune-up, under-the-hood work, or tire repair. The quality Chevron products, from engine to clutch, take it to Hutch, 705 Gaffney.